Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow, now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host Eddie Trunk.
Welcome, everybody. It's Eddie Trunk, and this is the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New episodes every Thursday. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and appreciate you subscribing and checking it out. Hope everybody is close to getting ready for their Christmas and got your shopping done and got all your preparations done. And I wish each and every one of you celebrating a very, very Merry Christmas coming up now in just a couple days. And it's here. The holidays are here. We are smack into it. Hope you're all doing well. And another double dip for you for your holiday listening. Coming up a little later on from the warm and sunny climate of Cancun, Mexico, Living Color, Vernon and Corey. I'll set that one up in just a bit. First up, though, Yngwie Malmsteen. This comes from the SiriusXM studios in New York City. Interview happened a few weeks ago. Yngwie was in New York to play Sony Hall, a show that I hosted later that night. He took a break from his sound check to walk over to the SiriusXM studios and join me in studio. And that was a lot of fun. Not a lot of guests coming into the studios these days, but I was able to get into New York City and into the studio. Yngwie got over to see me, and then we both went over for his show later on that night at Sony Hall. Yngwie, always great to talk to, and we got that conversation first. And then second, Vernon and Corey from Living Color. This comes from my radio show as well, like all the interviews. And this took place in Cancun, Mexico, at a great event that I co-host called The Sands. Vernon and Corey, one of the acts to play there with Living Color, managed to get them to come over just before their sound check for their gig that night to sit in with me some. I was in an area that was like a lounge area of this resort called Dreams and Secrets in Cancun. So first up, we go to the New York City SiriusXM studios. A few weeks ago, Yngwie Malmsteen, currently on tour, and here he is dropping by my studio in New York City before he played Sony Hall that night. All right, we're back live from New York City, and it is great to have in the studio, sitting right across the console from me, the one and only, the maestro, Mr. Yngwie Malmsteen. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
How are you, man? You happy to be on the road?
Wow, yeah, we're back.
You're back?
We're back, man. We're out for about a week. We've done some gigs like on and off before, but now we're actually on the bus. We're going around. We're going to go all across now.
It's got to feel good, man, because I know during the lockdown you did the stream from Vegas, and like you said, you did some scattered shows. You made Parabellum, but now get out there like you're used to.
It's back in the saddle, so to speak.
Yeah.
It is so weird because it doesn't feel like different. It feels normal. You just jump right in, you know.
Now you can carry all the Marshalls in the U-Haul behind you in the bus. How are you doing that?
yeah.
You got the wall of Marshalls. How do you carry them all?
I don't know how they fit them in there, but it's just a lot. Yeah, 55 heads of things.
How many shows have you done so far on this?
Now we've done five, I think.
When you get out and start a tour early in, you got to kick off rusted initially, or are you ready to go from the first show? You feel it?
It's really funny because it seems like, especially the first show, is almost always amazing, you know. And then maybe a couple of shows in, you get a little more picky, you know, and then you start thinking, I should have done that a little different. So it felt natural. Well, very natural, yeah.
Do you find yourself, when you go out on a tour like this, when it's first starting, do you change a lot as far as the set? Will you change songs in and out? Will you, some maybe after one night, but you know what, I don't want to do this. Oh. You do a lot, or you stay locked in once you find something
Oh, my
works?
God, no. The set's never the same. In fact, you know, I kind of tell the guys come in my room before the show. I say, like, well, let's go through a set list. We put a set list and put tape. You know, tape it all over stage, and then when I go on, I play a different set anyway. I just start playing different songs, and they follow, you know. But because that, to me, that's kind of like the danger and the excitement of being on stage, like where, you know, shouldn't be so rigid, you know.
Yeah.
Plus all the intros and the solos and everything's improvised, so it's never the same.
Well, people can tell that, like when you watch, if people watch you when you play, even when you did the live stream, it looks like there's a lot of improvisation going on where you're actually cueing the band and doing stuff on the fly.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of that, like I imagine that just has to come from instinct working with the band where they can kind of feel your motions and where you're going, right?
Absolutely. No, that's absolutely. No, it's exactly like that. Even the arrangements of the songs can change. If I just do a certain thing like this, they know that's the end.
Yeah.
Even though we have maybe 16 bars more, but that's it. Now I'm going to start something else. And if it says, now the next song on the list says, let's say, whatever, Nice is a Burn, whatever. No, I'm going to go into the next song anyway. And maybe do it later in the set.
So they really got to be on their toes.
Absolutely.
Your band has to be on your... Your bass player is nodding his head like, oh, yeah, yep. We got to be on our toes.
Yeah, he knows.
Yeah. Has there ever been a train wreck on stage where everybody got lost?
Not really. It's not really. I don't think so. Because it's a feel thing, you know?
Yeah. I was thinking about this before you came in. And we're going to take some calls from the audience because they'd love to say hello to you. And I know you only have a few minutes here because Yngwie's playing tonight at Sony Hall here in New York City. We're going to figure out what time he's going on. We're not 100% sure yet, but he's going on at some point tonight here in New York.
Yeah. We go on after the openers.
Speaking of openers, so John 5 was originally supposed to be with you on this tour, and he's no longer, right?
Right.
So is that was just his decision. He didn't want to go out, right?
I'm not really sure what happened there because it was all set, you know.
Right.
So I think it was some sort of a COVID related thing.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's what he had told me too. Yeah. Because I know he's excited about playing with you, obviously.
We have some cool bands.
Are you carrying the bands, or there's different ones in every city?
No, we have Sunlord and East of Eden.
Okay.
They come with us though. And sometimes they add another one on too.
All right.
So there's a
band starting now for
exactly.
Go now to Sony Hall if you want to see all the opening acts.
Exactly, yeah.
But I was thinking about this, Yngwie, when just before you came in, before we talked to some callers, your career has been a long time now and a lot of records, including a really, really great new record. I think I just saw in Classic Rock, they gave it 9 out of 10 stars for Parabellum. So you've got a new record you want to support. And of course, everybody wants to hear the old stuff also. What's the thought process when you go out on a tour to make a set list? What are you doing, stuff that you just feel like playing, or do you keep the fans in mind as far as what they want?
It's a great question because it is such a big problem, you know, because I want to keep the show tight, you know, I don't want to be on for 3 hours,
right?
You know, because it's a time, there's a certain, you know, sweet spot there, you know.
I agree. You can go too long,
exactly,
or too short, right?
Yeah, so I want to keep it there, and they have the, you know, the encores and stuff, they're kind of up in the air too. So obviously, when, you know, a lot of times, you know, in the last few years, you go on the road and you don't even necessarily have a brand new record out. You know, you just go out anyway, you know. But this time, it is a brand new record. So I feel very strongly about the new album. I want to really put some of that stuff on there. Although it's right now, I think 3 or 4 only, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to add more in. But then obviously we have the, you know, what quote-unquote classics, you know, as well. But sometimes I throw something in that maybe is not so well known, because I just want to do that too, because it's, you know, it's not always, it's very difficult to put it together. So that's why the set list is never set until about half an hour before the show.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
And then you start taping them up all over the dressing room and call the band in.
No, that's so I just basically go through what we done last night. I said, I don't know, I changed that, blah, 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 blah. And then they have them printed out and taped all over the stage so everybody can see them. But even when we have that, I don't follow that anyway, you know. So it depends on the night. Depends on how the sound is, how the crowd is, you know. It's never set the same way.
And for a while now, you've been doing all the singing. You don't use a singer anymore. You're the singer as well.
Yeah.
How have you liked that singing?
About 10 years.
Yeah. How do you like that singing live and playing live? I mean, you're such a showman up there, and obviously you're doing all the guitar stuff, and then having to make sure you're at that mic. Has that been an adjustment for you?
Not really. No.
Comfortable with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You remember this, that when I was a kid in Sweden, I started gigging when I was like in grade school. You know, I was
And you were singing then too?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Always. I had my former band Rising Force in 1979. And I had every bass player and every drummer in the whole of Sweden in there. And it was just me on lead guitar and lead vocals. That's it. It was the only thing that was the same. So when I sent the tape to guitar player in 1982, that was a tape of me playing all the instruments and singing everything. So that's what I always done anyway. This is kind of like a full circle almost now. So it's not new to me.
Right.
But there's so much guitar stuff going on that the vocal part is not going to be a distraction, you know.
And you don't have to. You can't throw your singer out of the band anymore. You are
no.
the singer.
Yeah, yeah. That's
you can't have any more problems with lead singers, Yngwie.
I ran out.
You ran out. I think you figured out what works the best is you just do it, right?
Yeah. Nah, it's comfortable. It's good.
Do you think you ever want to work with a singer again?
You know, I never say never, but at this time, it's not something I would do now. You know,
right.
I don't feel like it.
And what have you been doing from Parabellum Live? Have you done Eternal Bliss?
Not yet.
I love that one.
We've done it. Yeah, that's a lot of production in that one. So that we work on that sound check and stuff to get it in. We've done Wolves at the Door and Relentless Fury, and we've done the title track, the very fast instrumental one.
Yeah.
We got to throw in some more stuff. We have more stuff that's like on the burner because we didn't do rehearsals for this tour. Just throw in the songs as we go through the sound checks, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it works good.
But that's the challenge. You want to do some stuff from Parabellum, but then, you know, you've got Black Star and I'll See the Light
exactly.
Tonight and I'm a Viking and all this stuff. Like,
and
what do you
far
do?
Far Beyond the Sun.
Far Beyond the Sun.
Evil
what do you do?
Eye.
And then you're playing 5 hours
exactly.
And then you can't
then
do that.
Exactly, it's going to be a 12-hour show.
And one more thing before we take a few calls from me, and I want to let the audience talk to you for a bit and then we'll let you get out of here. You were telling me, because I remember I was talking to you when you were making Parabellum, and you had said to me, you go on this record, because you took a lot of time with it, you were COVID, nothing else was happening, you had your studio there in Miami, you just got into it and really went at it, and you said to yourself, you said to me, you know, I'm pushing some things here that like I've not really done before, like you wanted to really go out and explore some new ground with this record.
Well, I mean, it was a natural thing. I wasn't necessarily saying I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna just let it naturally happen. But the things that did happen were a little bit out of the ordinary in the sense where you know, even some of the instrumentals went outside of what I normally do.
How so though? When you say that, what do you mean in terms of technique, ability,
more
approach?
Like rhythmically, you know, maybe a little more. Our late great Malcolm Dome said, he said, like, well, you know, this like reminds me of some of the progressive, you know, like Emerson, Lake and Palmer, the time changes and stuff like that, you know, which I normally wouldn't do, you know. I mean, but this is not, there wasn't something I did on purpose. It just happened naturally. But with all that time that was allowed, I could pick and choose from so many things that I came up with. I came up with 70, 80, 90 things, you know, and I had to make it 10. So I just took the ones that I felt were the strongest, you know. But they weren't, I wasn't deliberately saying, okay, I'm going to do this in this genre or this vein or this direction, nothing. It was just all natural how things happened, you know. You know, and some of them were a little bit more, I don't know what to call it.
Challenging?
Yeah, would be the word maybe. Yeah.
Challenge? Are they challenging to play live?
Especially the title track. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like Paganini on steroids.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, you got to go out and play this stuff live with a band. I can't even imagine.
Well, we're doing that
one. Challenge every night. It's you're getting pushing everybody, including yourself to some degree,
But the thing with me is, like, when I go on stage, I know that there's titles that says a song, but they have intros and they have solos and stuff like that. They're all completely like an open canvas. You know, I can, and it will all be improvised and all be done there on the spot. And that is a challenge, and that is the danger of doing this. And that sort of gets me going, you know, because, you know, if you would just play exactly note for note like a jukebox, I don't think I would be excited about it. You know, it'd still be okay, but that's not what I want to do.
One last thing from me. I just thought of this. You talked about that famous tape that you sent from Sweden to the U.S. That was what got you here and what got everybody, you know, people started talking. So that was, you're still in Sweden. Of course, you come to the U.S. The first thing you do is the lead guitar on the Steely record, then Alcatraz, and then your own thing. But on that tape that you sent, did you send it to Mike Varney?
Yeah.
Okay, so the tape...
But he worked at the Guitar Player magazine.
Right, so that. But on that tape, what was there anything on it that ended up with either... Well, the Steeler stuff was done. You just played the guitar on that. But anything that ended up on the first album or on Alcatraz?
Yeah, Black Star was on there.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. So Black Star, it's a funny story because I had a studio, and one day I managed to get a new mixer board, new microphones. So I mic'd up the drum set, and there was no one there. It was just me. So I put down the drums, and I played the drums. I go, oh, I like this. So I put down the bass, and then put some keyboards, and then the guitars, and that became Black Star.
Oh, wow.
That was on that tape. Evil Eye was on there. Night Ships Are Burned was on there.
So all stuff you sat on, it didn't go to Alcatraz. It's stuff that you sat on.
Some of it went to Alcatraz,
Hiroshima Mon Amour?
No, Too Young to Die, for instance.
Oh, that was on a version of that was on the tape?
Not on the tape, but I had it. Right. The idea, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was only a few songs on there, but I had many more. Then I sent him another one, you know, because from the point the first tape landed, so to speak, there.
Right.
For me to get to the States was like a couple of months. So I kept on sending him stuff.
Jeez, I'll never forget, man. I'll never forget hearing that Steeler record and everybody, like you were still, like, I'm sure you were still kind of like figuring out being in America and all that, but the shot that sent across the music world, who the fuck is this guy playing guitar? Ing what? Who? Yeah. You know, looking at the facts, like, what is this? And that was done. You just came in and played guitar on it, right? That was your first thing?
Yeah, and I had to record the whole thing in one day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I worked in a record store around that time. It was like, because we used to have to get it as an independent release or whatever. We couldn't keep it in stock because everyone keep coming in. Like, that guitar player, that bandit Steeler, it's still Varney's biggest record.
I think so, too. But you know what's even crazier? This My Rising Force album was a solo deal with Japan. And it was as an import on... promoted, unmarketed, everything in America went on the Billboard charts as an import record.
Oh, I remember that too.
So then they had to decide to release it here too, you know?
Because I have the Japanese version with the band around it still.
Yeah, but that import version is the one that made the charts, which is very strange.
Right.
Because there's nobody promoted it.
Yeah, know? But it was just people talking about what they heard. They couldn't believe what they were hearing.
That was kind of crazy.
It's amazing. All right, Yngwie Malmsteen is here. The tour has just started. We have, of course, for people listening across America and Canada, so just go to Yngwie's website, find a date, and see if he's coming towards anywhere near you. If you're in New York City tonight, he will be at Sony Hall here in New York. Let's get a few people want to say hello to you, Yngwie, on real quickly. Here's Johnny here in New York wanted to say hello to you. Johnny, you're on the air with the Maestro. Johnny, your radio's up.
Hello, how you doing,
Johnny,
guys?
Turn that radio down, buddy. You're on with Yngwie.
Okay, come on. Yngwie, quick question. Before I get to my point, are you a vinyl or a CD person, and do you have a collection?
Well, I still have my vinyl collection from when I was a kid. I still have it. It's somewhere, but I have it. I have my very first LP I ever got.
Which was?
Deep Purple Fireball.
There you go.
Nice.
19 when I was a kid, you know. But I don't listen to the vinyl player. No, I don't. I do love the format. I think it's awesome. I think I'm so happy they put out Parabellum on a double vinyl.
You're just telling me the gatefold on
Yeah, it's incredible. The packaging is just incredible. I'm so like, yeah, this is just like it used to be. So cool, you know. So undoubtedly, the vinyl packaging beats everything.
Right.
No doubt.
But when I kind of listen to I don't know. I have a lot of classical CDs and stuff like that, but I'm not like a purist really in any way, shape, or form of those things. Except that I do prefer the packaging of the nostalgic value for me, the vinyl.
Right. People send me vinyl all the time. Like, I'll look at it, but I can't. I'm not getting a turntable. I'm not buying a needle and flipping it and cleaning it. I still like CDs.
That was kind of cool back in the day, though, when you took it home.
Oh, of course. You know. I stared at the covers. Of course. Yeah. Johnny, what was your question?
Do you crank it? When you're at home, do you crank it really loud? Like, is it, or are you a mellow kind of dude?
What?
Do you crank it?
You ever see a stack of ants, gotcha. John? Come on, man.
Gotcha. I don't know. When you're in your own peaceful home, you know, sometimes you can just turn it up so loud. All right. So, secondly, your guitars. I see you always seem to play the same guitar a lot. Do you travel with a lot of guitars? And I was wondering if you are a big collector of guitars, and I'll talk to you later, and good luck with the door.
Thank you. I have the Yngwie Malmsteen signature model from Fender Stratocaster, Yngwie Malmsteen signature, which is now my main guitar, but I have many of them, but they look the same. So you might think it's the same one, it's not. Then on top of that, I have also a quite extensive collection of guitars. I used to collect them, but I now collect other things. So,
sports cars. And watches.
And guns. Yeah.
How many you got?
A lot.
You got a lot.
Yeah.
So if shit goes down, I'm coming to Yngwie's house.
I'm definitely one of those guys. But that
where do you go shooting? You live in Florida. You
go
to range?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. But, and then, of course, the cars. But the guitars are, the ones I have now made for me, they're so good that I don't go out searching for instruments. I have the ones I want, you know.
Right.
And I have the amps and I have the stuff, you know.
So. You ever play anything but a Strat?
Well, I have a lot of other guitars. I have Gibsons. I have some of my friends give me guitars. I got Vi's guitar. I got Uli's guitar. I got Brian May's guitar. I got Hal Holdsworth guitar. I got all sorts of different weird guitars.
Do you scalp? You don't scalp the neck on all of them, right?
No. Some of my really old vintage guitars, I don't do anything. They just stay the same.
Right.
But I don't use them for anything.
What's the most valuable guitar you have?
Well, it's weird because it's not really a valuable guitar in a sense. It's a 71 Strat, but it's called the Duck, and I was offered 7 figures for it.
Why? Because that's what it's worth, or because it's yours?
Because it's mine. Wow. That's not what it's worth.
But you're not going to sell it?
No.
You could sell and get more guns.
That's okay. I'm good.
You buy a lot
of
guns for 7 figures.
Yeah, no shit.
Let's say hello to, let's see. Here's Maureen, and Maureen is listening to us in Colorado on Trunk Nation. Hey, Maureen, you're on with Yngwie.
Hey. Hi, Yngwie. How are you doing?
Hello.
Hi. First of all, number one, I am going to your concert in Grand Junction, Colorado, so on December 6th. So thank you for going to the state of Colorado.
Thank you.
And my question for you is about whether you have any plans to do a sequel or a follow-up album to your concerto suite for electric guitar and orchestra.
It's a good question. That was very different thing in many different ways because I had to take a whole year out just composing, and I'm very, very proud of that thing actually, and I may do another one. I probably most likely will do another one, but that's not going to happen right now. Right now I'm kind of like in rock and roll mode.
That's the one that came out. That was shot, right? That's the video. I have that on. Well, it was one of them on video.
It was recorded with a Prague Symphony.
Right.
In Czech Republic. And then it was performed live in Japan with the New Japan Philharmonic.
You were on both of them as well?
Of course.
Okay. I thought you meant somebody else took your music. And
No. It's my performance on
right.
That's the official.
So you did it twice live?
No, I did more than one, twice. I did like five times live. But the recording, the original recording was studio recording, yeah?
Oh, I see.
That was done in Prague.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, you know, the original version. But the live version, I think, is more well-known because of the video.
Right. So, well, Maureen, you're not going to get that in Colorado, but somewhere down the line, maybe Yngwie will do that again.
I'm actually doing some of that symphony live.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Maybe
I brought
you will,
the
then.
Prague Philharmonic with me.
They're in the trailer behind the bus.
That's right.
Brian in Minnesota. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for having me on, Eddie. Yngwie, I know you were just talking about how you don't like working with vocalists anymore, but I'm wondering, out of the guys you have worked with, you know, Graham Bonnet with Alcatraz, Jeff Scott Soto, Joe Lynn Turner, who was your favorite and why?
Ron and James Dio.
You did Dream On with Ronnie James Dio, right? Did you?
Yeah, but I also did about 100 tours with him.
Right, but he didn't sing. He sang with you on that version of Dream On.
We done recordings live together.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. That's besides the point. He was my favorite. You know, God bless him.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Brian, for the call. There's your answer. Let's say hello to Chris. Chris is in Illinois. Joining us now, you're on with Yngwie Malmsteen. Chris, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
We got you, man.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I appreciate Eddie Trunk taking my call. Here's my question. What would you think and how do you think about Steve Vai, Frank Zappa, and Joe Satriani?
Yngwie's thoughts about them as players, well, is it your question?
Steve is like my brother, you know. I mean, I've known him since I was a little kid. And he is amazing. He's one of the originals, you know. And Zappa, I can't even tell you how much I love his lyrics. They're amazing. And who was the third one? Satriani, yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Joe is awesome.
You did that, for people that don't know, you did a tour with Vai,
and Satriani.
Zach. Well, you did. Actually, you did G3 with Joe.
Yeah, and then we did the Generation X with Zach and
Nuno
and Tosin and Vai.
And Vai.
Yeah.
Did you have fun doing that?
Of course. We did like five tours.
Yeah, six around tours. The world, right?
Yeah.
And for people that didn't see that, what was really cool about that is like when Yngwie would – so if Zach was on before Yngwie, then when Yngwie would come out, you guys all crossed over.
Right.
And then at the end, you all came out and did, was it Bohemian Rhapsody, I think, right?
Yeah, we did.
Which is wild. And, I know Nuno was really pushing for that.
We did all sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very different from G3, but still really cool.
Yeah. You going to do that again, you think, Generation X? You think you do
I'm
that?
I'm sure. Yeah.
I saw a couple of those shows. Those were unbelievable. Yeah. I think Nuno was the one that said if we were all getting paid by the note, we'd all make a lot more money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of notes.
That's for sure.
Let's say hello to let's see here. We got a couple more in for Yngwie. Here's Al in Jersey calling us. Go ahead, Al.
Yngwie, it's a real pleasure to talk to you. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
I've seen you quite a few times, and I've always I'm a guitar player myself, and I've always walked away being inspired by you. And for you know, I know sometimes people say, "Ah, that guy's too good. I'll never be as good as him." For you guitar players out there that see Yngwie, never say that. Always walk away wanting to be better, and let him inspire you to be better, which I always do. So, thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's the right attitude.
My question. I have two questions, real quick. First question is, you've been approached by a few artists to join their bands or whatever. Is there any one that you came close to that you kind of considered it, you know? And my second question is, how did you come up with the idea of the scallop of fretboard? How did you come up with that idea and why? And I'll listen to your questions off the air. Thank you, Eddie. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you. All right. Well, you know, there was a time when I got all sorts of people. In fact, when I was in Steeler, Phil Mogg from UFO came to the show, and he asked me to come down and see him the next day. I said, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, that would be kind of cool. And then I got the phone call from the Alcatraz people the same day. So I had to choose from doing that in one day, and I decided to do an Alcatraz thing because I wrote the songs instead of doing, you know, going on stage and doing Doctor Doctor every night, even though I love UFO, don't get me wrong.
Right.
There's many others too. I don't want to get into that right now. But that also, that when I was a little kid, you know, this was a different time. There was no internet and nothing like that. So I would build like model ships and boats, like cars and tanks and all sorts of models. So I used to build things all the time. And so I wasn't scared to use, you know, go carve out wood and stuff like that on the guitar. So one day I decided to carve out the wood in between the frets because I'd seen an old lute from the 16th century that had that. And I did on one of my bad guitars. I'm like a kid only. And I realized you get a better grip on the string. You really, you know, control the vibrato and everything. It doesn't make it easier to play fast. It actually makes it a little more difficult to play fast because the action becomes higher. But it's something I always did. And, you know.
Had anybody done that before to a guitar before?
I believe
you?
They did, but I wasn't aware of it because there wasn't any information on that right. Back in the 70s. You know?
Right, right. Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
But I think that Blackmore did it. I think that McLaughlin did it. I think that the guitar player in Blue Oyster did it.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know for sure. That's right. What I've been heard. That's right. What I've been told. But I didn't know. I didn't know that then.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know. Yeah. Last call, and then we'll let you go. Jody in Missouri wants to jump on here real quick.
Hey,
go ahead, Jody.
Going,
hey, Jody, you're on with
Ingve. Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Hey.
All right. Awesome. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, man, real quick, because we're short on time.
All right. Awesome. I caught you back on the AC/DC tour.
Wow, 85.
Back in what?
1985.
Yeah, 85.
I remember that tour vividly because I love those guys. I can't even tell you how great those guys were to tour with. They were the most down to earth, amazing, genuine people, and what a band! Oh my God, I did like 100 shows with them. It was amazing. I loved it.
I was going to say you can imagine me telling my friends about the opening, you know, guitar player because you just were like so, you know, sonic, man.
Different.
Yngwie and AC/DC back to back, very different approaches for sure.
It worked.
It worked. You, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but honestly, I got to do 3 dates with you in Texas last summer, and Emilio, if he's right there, I got to hang out with him for a little bit. But, man, I got to tell you, just being around you was like greatness. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to thank you for your years of hard work. And, you know, I'm a truck driver, and, man, I take you on the road with me.
Jonathan, sorry to cut you off. Or Jody, I think it was. I'm sorry. Sorry to cut you off, but I'm late on time because I have to get a couple breaks in here, and I got to let Yngwie get out of here. But thank you all for your calls. Yngwie's got to go. He's got a sound check anyway.
Yep, yep.
Parabellum is out now. The tour just started. Go to the website. Find a date near you. If you're going to New York City tonight, I'll see you there at Sony Hall. Great to see you, my friend. Thank you for coming in. So good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Yngwie. Check out his new album, Parabellum, out there right now and see him on tour. A lot of notes, a lot of shredding. If you're into that, he is the master. It's Eddie Trunk coming up next. Living Color.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's.
Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Eddie Trunk Podcast, and next up on the second week in a row of a double interview for you, we go to the Sands Music Festival in Cancun, something I co-hosted, and that happened about a month and a half ago, I guess. Really fun festival, all kinds of music that is showcased there, predominantly 80s-based stuff. Living Color, one of the late additions to the festival this year. And I was able to get Vernon Reed and Corey Glover to come over and join me a bit before they soundcheck to play that night. Here's how that conversation went. All right, Corey's not here yet. When he walks in, we'll throw a headset on him if he makes it. But Vernon Reed is punctual and here and ready to talk and ready to rock. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, man. It's been a while. It's great to see you.
It has been a while. We were just talking when we were going to break. Joel, my producer, played a little bit of Cult of Personality. Yeah. And he's like, it's the gift that keeps giving.
It really is.
When you wrote it, did you know it was going to be that?
You know what? When the song was written, it was written in one rehearsal. And I always say that was the one of the best days of the band's life, but not because the song blew up. Yeah. It's because we were not in the way. The song used us to write it. Like, it, the way it came together in this one rehearsal, and then we played it the very next show at CBGB's, and it was instantly, the crowd dug it instantly.
So it came together in a different way than other stuff you've written? There was a different...
Yeah, there's different things. Like, I would bring in songs. I co-wrote songs with Corey. There were different things. But this song was written in one Living Color rehearsal. All four of us put it together.
Do you remember when you had the riff?
Corey was singing something to me, and I stumbled into it. He was singing something, and I was like trying to figure out what it was. And then I played da 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 da, and I was like, oh snap, da 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 da. I said, Will, play a beat to this. Da 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 da. Will played a beat, and then it just started. We was really riffing. And I went da 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 da. You know what I mean? And then was you. So it was like, it started out. So Corey was the spark, but it was like it was almost like a mistake. It was like, oh what? And I went ba ba da boo bop. And it was like, oh snap. And then immediately, we were like, oh snap. And then it just kind of, I don't know what else to say. It just kind of created. I mean, we did it. But it kind of created itself. And I'd already written the lyrics in my book, but I had no song. I had no song connected to it. It was just like a poem, really.
I always wonder about that when bands have this iconic riff in their catalog, the one. And I always wonder if they know, as the guitar player, if you know when that riff comes out of your guitar, that's like, that's the thing that's going to be like... the career, that's what everybody's going to be talking about forever, that riff, that song.
You know what? It's kind of like when we...
By the way, Corey Glover just sat down.
Hey, Eddie.
Yeah, good to see you, man.
How's it going?
We were just saying, we just came back from the break and the Cult of Personality was playing. And I was asking Vern if he said it's the gift that keeps giving, that song. I said, did you know it was going to be that when you guys wrote it? And he's telling me how it was a different thing, the way that Cult of Personality came to you guys. It was your idea. It was an idea that you were messing around with, apparently.
Yeah, I had a riff idea that I gave to Vernon, and Vernon screwed it up.
Right. It was like a mistake. He was trying to sing this other thing, and I went da-da-da-da, and it was almost like as soon as that first line, ba-ba-do-ba-da, ba-ba-do-ba-do, it was like, Will! Boom. And then from that point on, it started to kind of, because we played that riff for a while, and then I was like, this is okay, there's enough of this. I was da 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 da. And then we just kind of, it created itself.
But did either of you guys know that the song was going to be like because just about any band you can think of has the song. You know, whether even a band like Led Zeppelin with the catalog they have, Stairway to Heaven is the song, right? So for Living Color, it's always going to be Cult of Personality. Yeah. You got a ton of great songs and records, but the song, did you have any idea when you record that's the song?
Well, I'll tell you what, the song's evolution, by the end of the evolution of the song, we were like, that's going to start the album. Because we used to start the song with the Neon Lights, Nobel Prize, you know, the bridge was we played it instrumentally as an intro, right? It's kind of like almost like a Rush type of thing. Da, 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 da. And then we had the sample, and then da 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 da. We went, and so what happened?
We switched.
We can't hear you.
and the chorus was in the beginning instead of the back end. Yeah. So it was like Cult of Personality. Look in my eyes. What do you see? Cult of Personality. It wasn't even Cult of Personality. It was like, look in my eyes. What do you see? Da 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 da. Cult of Personality.
And Ed was like, Ed Stasium was like, you know what? You just do the sample, take the intro, but he said, lose the intro because the riff is so great. And we started with the sample, start the song with the sample, and then go, and we played it that way ever since. We used to play it with this whole intro thing.
Right.
And we played that live. And the song from the first time we played it at CBGB's, it was our local fan's favorite.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But when we were in the studio, it was like, it takes a little too long to get to the thing. So we dropped the intro thing, and we started with the sample. And the sample originally was Martin Luther King, Free at Last, Free at Last, Thank God Almighty, we're free at last, da 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 da. But we couldn't clear.
Martin Luther King was not free.
It was not.
Right.
So then.
Wait, who owns that? Who would own
the King Foundation?
They own his actual speech.
The King Foundation.
Really?
Generally, if people are either in violation or they paid a bunch of money, to use Martin Luther King's voice on a record, you have to pay the King Foundation.
Wow.
And I
figured that would be like public domain or something at that point.
It's very, 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 very expensive.
It was and I tell you, I was so bummed. You know, like it was like $10,000, and the label wasn't going to clear the sample. So I was totally bummed. I was really bummed. And I'm walking around Harlem. I was on 125th Street. And there were these guys were selling tapes and whatnot, and walking by. And this guy had a tape of Malcolm X. And I literally was walking past and said, let's start right now, right down to earth in a language that everybody here could easily understand. It's this speech to the grassroots. And I bought the cassette. And I was like, you know what? We're going to swap this out. And there's a lot of interlocking events.
But there was no money involved in that to use that
because,
on there?
No, because one of his daughters, Malak Shabazz, was good friends of my first wife.
So it was an inside deal. You got a favor.
But she actually used to come. Malak Shabazz used to come to see us play.
So she was a fan.
Yeah, she used to come to CBGB.
Yeah.
And she consequently spoke to Betty Shabazz, and we were able to get the, you know, because they thought it was a cool thing to do.
That's
like the most subversive thing about the best thing about the song is that every time it plays, Malcolm X plays.
Right.
Every time the song plays.
Has that song been used? Have you guys licensed it out a lot? Has it been shown up in whether it be a lot of movies or commercials or stuff or no?
It's showed up in a few. We licensed it to a few things. Like the main thing that's kept it current is that CM Punk, the wrestler, he uses Cult of Personality as his intro music. And the story about how CM Punk used Cult of Personality is that when he was 12 years old, his little league team, Cult of Personality was his get out on the field music. And they won their championship. And that's the reason why he's got the warm fuzzies
now, Corey,
since he was 12.
Tell me honestly, you get tired of singing it every time?
No, it surprises me all the time having to sing it, because there are days when I'm like, I don't feel like doing shit today. And then a song comes on, and I was like, oh, I could do this.
You know what? It's what's weird about it. You would think it's the one song I honestly can say we're never tired of playing. It's a charge. It's something about it. You know, it's weird. Like other tunes, you can get tired of them, blah, blah, blah. But Cult is, It's weird. We still dig it.
I always wondered that because, like, last night Cheap Trick played, and I'm watching them, and I'm like, they can never play without playing I Want You to Want Me, right?
Right, right.
And they've been doing that since, like, 1976. And you just wonder, like, oh, shit, this is coming. All right, I want you. But, you know, like, when you got, as you called Cult, a gift to a band would kill to have a gift like that. And if you've got one or two or three, I would imagine you're just so grateful for that reaction to have that.
You know what's so funny? You know, I knew I wasn't going to be able to see Cheap Trick. I got in yesterday.
Yeah.
So I'm in my room and I swear I went to iTunes and I asked it to play I Want You to Want Me. Because I wasn't going to.
The studio or live version? Because
I did both.
Very
I did both.
They're
I did both.
Very different.
I did both. I did both. Yeah. The studio version.
Didn't I see you cry? No!
Well, the thing is, it's got the little hick, almost like the funk, little funky drum.
Right.
And the boot live from Budokan.
Yeah.
Carlos. It's so cool. Yeah, man. It's such a. I love that song.
You know, Robin Zander, did you see any Cheap Trick, Corey?
I didn't. I stayed around. I watched Tesla, and my feet hurt, and I had to go.
And it's hot in there. It's very hot and humid. You guys better be prepared for that, because there's a lot of humidity in that room, especially with people in there. Yeah. But what's amazing, and Robin and Rick were on yesterday with those guys, is like, and Rick knows, I mean, Robin is a freak in that he looks the same and sings the same, and that dude has been doing it like
50 years.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I told him yesterday, I swear you like drank goat's blood or made a deal with the devil.
Picture Dorian Gray.
Something's going on.
The portrait
man.
Of Robin Zander.
Something's going on. Yeah, it's just not right. So I know we have limited time, but tell me what you guys have been up to. Now, you were on a tour. I know I was looking at your website before you came on that you pulled out of some stuff, right?
Yeah.
You're here, but you're not doing anything the rest of the year. What's the deal?
We're pretty much done after
this. I think this is it for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were doing Summerland in July and part of September.
With Everclear,
Hoobastank, and Wheatus.
Okay. And what happened?
You know what? Touring during the pandemic is weird because everyone's pretending as if it's normal touring time, and it's not normal touring time.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that happens on a tour affects what's going to go down, you know? And we had a situation with one of our buses. We've had a situation with our previous bus during the first leg of the tour. And
when you say situation, you mean COVID related?
The bus broke down.
So
the thing is, buses have been sitting in garages for a year. Tour buses need constant maintenance. They're always breaking down. The tour buses have been sitting and not moving for a long time. So it's not surprising. There are a lot of issues with buses. And the other thing is there's a shortage of buses and there's a shortage of bus drivers. A lot of bus drivers went back to trucking in order to get something Castle would normally drive bands around.
Right.
You know, a lot of these guys have multiple licenses. So some of them went back to trucking and what have you. So we had a bum bus the first trip, and it kind of was spewing carbon monoxide. It was very dangerous. This is the first leg, right? And that was a drag. We got through it. And then the next leg, we had a situation with the bus where the bus had a breakdown and we had to take extra flights that we weren't anticipating. Our budget was very, very, you know.
Razor thin.
It was razor thin. And the thing about it is that, you know, we're out here to entertain, but we're out here to make money. We're not out here to break even during a pandemic. It's like, why would you go out?
And you're being totally honest, and I tell that to the audience all the time. Right. Bands tour because it's how they make their living. Of course you want to play your music, but it's your business. You have to. And then, unfortunately, now where we're at with the music industry, where record sales are at, which are pretty much non-existent, the business is all on the road. You know, it's meet and greets, it's merch, it's playing live, and it's getting your guarantee and keeping the overhead low. So, that's the truth of it.
So the facts is, like, when we put out that thing, you know, due to transport, it's actual
transportation.
Truth, transportation is, it was like, okay, we stay on, then we're almost going to be paying to be out. And it just was not on. It's not on to do that and to be out during a global pandemic. You know, just coming out and playing in some of the places. Some places that their COVID protocols were tight. Some places were appallingly loose.
Yeah, here
I'm
it's
not going
to
name the states.
But here you got to be tested to go in and out of here, as I'm sure you know. Yeah. So we're kind of like in a bubble here, which is good.
Absolutely, it's great. But, and it should be that. But we were out, and a bunch of tours. Somebody in the crew got it. Somebody in the band got it, and the whole tour had to shut down.
I got it. I got it right after the first leg of the tour. I had it was very mild symptoms. I was vaccinated, and it lasted 6 days. But I got it. I tested positive for it.
How'd you feel?
Sick. I was like, I had a bad cough. I had a really high fever. I had a massive headache for 6 days, and into the first couple of days, I sneezing and coughing, and then all of a sudden, my sense of smell went away, and my sense of taste went away, and then I started to snowball at that point. And it took me like 6 or 7 days, and then I was completely recovered by it. I went to the doctor. The doctor said, "You're fine. Your antibodies are up. You're good." I probably laid dormant in me until I got off the road. But I know it was from one of those states that, like Vernon was saying, where their protocols are very, very lax.
Now, you've done gigs since you recovered from it, right? Because, you know, I was talking to Miles Kennedy about this because Miles got it early on. Mm-hmm. And Miles had recovered and he felt he was good, right? And then he was getting ready. He's out on a solo tour. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me, he goes, "Man, I started singing, playing guitar and singing my set the other day." He goes, "And I didn't realize it." He goes, "I didn't have the same wind I had." He goes, mm-hmm. "You know, so as a singer, mm-hmm. it's really concerning to you because for some, now being vaxxed, it seems like the one great thing is for all of us being vaxxed, the people I know people have gotten it vaxxed and they're back in action like 2-3 days.
Right.
You sound like you had it a little worse, but mm-hmm. still you got, so the recovery is a lot more there. But mm-hmm. for a singer, it's really concerning it affects your voice and your wind, right?
Right. And, you know, during that whole time, I had to I was humming to myself. I was singing along to things just to make sure that this was not going to affect it, that I was going to continue to be able to sing. And I was doing breathing exercises where I was like, because it affects your respiratory thing and your lungs. So if you're exercising your lungs, you know, deep breathing and, you know, yogic breathing, circular breathing kind of thing, it helps that out. So I'm fortunately I'm doing pretty well. Nothing adverse has happened just yet.
He's strong like bull.
Good. I know we got limited time. I know you guys got a sound check, but Shade has been out, what, 3-4 years now?
Yeah,
are you working on something during the pandemic? You've been writing?
He and I started doing a little writing, but we actually came up with what we're going to do for our next record. And it's a pretty bold, we're not announcing it.
Triple studio record, concept album. No, what are we talking?
It's four different covers of our faces, like it's the Kiss record.
It's kind of
like the 78 solo records.
Yeah, but it's a bold. It's, you know, we're gonna announce it, you know, and what have you. But the whole I'm not gonna say anything more because if I say more, it kind of gives away the premise.
Come on, Vern, give me a little something. What I mean is it a concept record.
Yeah.
Look at that. I'm onto it. Right. All right, when are you going to record it? Or is it written? Is it written yet?
It's not written.
See, okay, here's the thing. No. We're not going to. But no. And see,
we have some stuff to
say. You know what? I'll tell you what, though. We will, when we're ready to say exactly what it is, we want to say it with you.
All right, bring it on. I love that. I appreciate that. You know, every time I see you guys, you know what I think of? I think of
snow.
Snow.
Yes. That's exactly how I felt.
Snow.
Like this is the polar opposite, literally the polar opposite.
we're sitting by a beach with palm trees and 90 degrees at the beach. But every time
opposite.
I think of Vernon and Corey, I think of snow. And here's why, for people that don't remember. And the reason why I say this is because people come up to me and talk to me about that metal show still constantly every day. And I appreciate it. But they're always like, "Remember the one when there was no audience and Living Color was on?" And I was like, yeah, because and the funny thing about that. So people that don't know is there was like a massive snowstorm in New York, and we were set to shoot an episode. You guys were booked as the guests anyway. We just got super lucky that we happen to have a New York based band, which was rare, that it wasn't traveling in to do it, so we could do it. But there could be no audience because the snow was that bad. And one of you guys came from Jersey or something, right?
I live just outside of New York City. Vernon lives in Staten Island. Yeah. Either way, it was a trek to get into Manhattan.
Yeah, that was wild.
We sent cars for you guys, but at least you didn't have to do the driving. It was still like 4 or 5 hours to get in and out of what should have been 40 minutes.
Yeah. Right.
But it's a memorable episode because it's the only one we ever did with no audience because we couldn't let audience in. It was like a massive snowstorm in New York, but it was fun.
There was no audience, but there was no pandemic then either. Right. We didn't have to wear masks.
Exactly right. What do you guys got planned for tonight for your set? Anything?
I actually breaking out a couple of things like Glamour Boys. Like, this is a place for Glamour Boys.
Nice.
You know what I mean? And there are a couple of other little joints.
I got one. Are we going to get Type?
Oh, yeah. All right. Absolutely.
Corey just looked like, really?
Okay.
Corey, do you know you're singing Type?
Okay, fine. Okay. Yes. No,
Type's my song, man. I love Type.
That one and a couple of other joints. I'm thinking about we're going to do Memories Can't Wait because that's kind of what this whole thing is, right?
Yeah.
So that's just talking about, like, we had a certain set list that we did on Summerland, and this is going to be somewhat like that, but with adjustments. You know, throwing a couple of our stuff from our first record.
Well, my boy Drew over here that works with you guys, he told me you're pretty meticulous about your sound check, so I don't want to hold you up, man, because if the sound goes off tonight, then it's going to get blamed on me, you doing this interview.
Drew Ferrara.
He's the man.
He's the captain.
He's the man.
El
Capitan.
El Capitan. The El Capitan of rock and roll. He's the man secretly making it happen.
He's
the hand inside the puppet's head, bro.
I know Drew for about 10 years. He makes everything happen, this guy. I've seen him at festivals, like five bands calling on him. He's running around. He's the man with the plan, always.
We really, this whole time period, this crew that we've had on this time period has been fantastic.
Really excellent.
Top shelf dudes.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know you got to go. I appreciate you guys just stopping by for a few minutes. I can't wait to see you play tonight.
Eddie, always good to see you.
Good to see you. Look forward to hearing about the record when it's done. And I'm going to see the last Living Color show of the year tonight. Then,
yes,
right?
Thank you much. Yep.
Wow. All right. Well, Corey Glover, Vernon Reed, Living Color, I tell you to check out the upcoming shows they have, but they got none. Unless you're in Cancun, you're not seeing them until next year, but more gigs next year, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks to Vern and thanks to Corey. Great to have them on. And thanks earlier to Yngwie Malmsteen. And appreciate you guys listening to the Eddie Trunk podcast. Be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk. And don't forget to listen to Trunk Nation every day on Volume, Sirius XM channel 106. We will see you next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk podcast. Free. Be sure to subscribe. Spread the word. Enjoy your Christmas. I'll catch you then.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.